This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. It's time for Issues and Ideas, a show that features a wide variety of local voices sharing their thoughts and perspectives. What will sustainable tourism look like on the Central Coast in 2035? SLOCOG is hosting an event to discuss the possibilities.
Let's grab the bull by the horns here and maybe make some really lasting solutions that can be examples for other places. So they say, we want to be like the San Luis Obispo region.
Also, in the city of Atascadero, there's a push to bring people downtown.
And it's important to us as a city to have a very vibrant downtown. So anytime different ideas come up, it's like, oh my gosh, let's do that.
These stories and more coming up on Issues and Ideas. Good afternoon. It's Monday, April 18th, 2022. I'm Carol Tangeman. Let's start with agenda breakdown.
Welcome to Agenda Breakdown, a podcast that explores how cities and counties make decisions and how you can have a say. I'm Kim Bischoff, and today we're going to talk about San Luis Obispo's blueprint for future development, the general plan. The state of California requires all of its cities to develop a vision for how they plan to handle future growth. The document that contains that vision is called a general plan. On April 19th, San Luis Obispo's City Council will hear a status report on its latest general plan. Here to help us understand why that matters and what we should be looking for is Steve Peck, president of Peck Planning and Development. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, first, I want to acknowledge the obvious. We're about to have a conversation about a policy document. It's an important one, but it is a policy document nonetheless. Why should listeners stay with us?
The document probably affects everybody's lives every day. It determines whether we have adequate roads, adequate housing, how much you pay for that housing, whether there's a grocery store nearby your house or not, if there's bicycle accessibility. Probably everything you experience physically in a city is determined by the general plan.
What elements does the general plan contain?
Every general plan contains a number of different elements depending on the city. Each general plan is required to cover land use, basically where things are located in the community. Where's the downtown? What's permitted there? Where are the shopping areas? Where are the employment concentrations? Where are schools located? That sort of thing. Closely associated with that is a circulation element. Streets, roads, bike paths, that sort of thing, all to support the circulation that's necessary for the land use element. Housing is a very important element of the general plan. It determines how much housing we have, whether that housing is matched up well or poorly with the types of employment we have. I've been around long enough where I was around when housing elements were born, and the purpose there was to identify adequate housing sites for everybody who works in the community. So it's a nice little social justice reason for making sure that the town wasn't exclusively for some workers and not others. It also is to include an open space and conservation element, which is very important in San Luis Obispo because of our high value we put on open space and living outdoors and the green belt and so forth. Safety and noise are the other two required elements. Noise because of the impact of noise on our physical well-being. And safety used to be sort of a routine element, but now that covers climate action, sea level rise in some communities and so forth. In San Luis Obispo, there's also a water and wastewater element to make sure we have adequate utilities for development.
Are there any parts of the plan that tend to generate a lot of conversation?
I think in general, any type of development in the community generates strong interest. This isn't a spectator town. People participate. They want to know what's happening next to them. They moved here for a very important reason. That's the quality of life. And they want to make sure that quality of life is not degraded, certainly preserved or improved. So the general plan update speaks to preserving those values that are articulated in the general plan, how they're going to be preserved, while at the same time providing opportunities to sort of move forward, allow for additional employment opportunities, additional housing opportunities. It's always this balancing act of how do we move forward and develop and grow economically while still preserving the things about the town that we love.
That gets to something I wanted to ask you about. The very existence of city planning assumes that cities are entities that grow and change, and cities are inhabited by humans who have this tendency to want to push back against growth and change. As a planner, how do you handle that?
I think having done this for a while now, I think this is probably my 45th year, and having done probably, at least three dozen general plans as the principal planner on them, I found it boils down to some pretty basic things you probably learned in grammar school, and that's respecting those feelings and opinions, providing options for those who to consider them, sort of pulling everybody through that same decision not whole to the other side. So what emerges is an acknowledgement by those who participate that they considered choices, that the plan represents their values and interests, or at least that they were considered. And then what we have going forward isn't something that was made up in the back room. It was intense involvement by the local population. And it becomes somewhat of the social contract, the social compact for development going forward. One of the things that is most disappointing for me as a professional planner is to see some plans go forward that are fairly sloppy and not inclusive of public's opinion, because after someone like me leaves a town as the person putting together the general plan, they have to live here. I don't. And so you need to leave it better than you found it. And the people participating in the process need to know that their opinions were respected and included and considered. And what comes out the other end has their fingerprints on it, not mine. It's a fairly respectful process. Sometimes it takes a long time to help folks understand the choices that they are making explicitly or implicitly. And so once the plan is done, you hopefully have advocates for its implementation because they know the trade-offs that were made along the way. So, and San Luis Obispo has always done that, sometimes successfully, sometimes not so successfully. But I would say this last update of the general plan in 2014 had a really good representation on their loose task force. The council and the planning commission was very thoughtful about the changes they made. So what came out the other end was fairly stable and didn't change over time. I think that's really important.
You're listening to Agenda Breakdown. I'm Kim Bischoff, and I'm here today with Steve Peck of Peck Planning and Development. What can we expect to come up at the city council meeting?
The item that is coming before the city council is a status report on their existing general plan. And it's looking to, after about 8 years of using the major general plan update that was done in 2014, what is working there and what is not? Is it producing the housing that was intended or isn't it? Is it producing the right price points of housing, the right mix of rental and ownership units? And so the staff's giving a fairly comprehensive update on how much land is left to accommodate our needs and whether that's adequate or not, what kinds of housing is being produced for the very low, low, and moderate income categories. And I think one of the things that the city is looking at is, as we're about halfway through this most recent general plan update in 2014, when might we next need to look at another update, gather the community together again and determine where growth occurs after that. So I think for the first time in this general plan's lifetime, the staff is sort of looking down the road as to when we need to start thinking about this again so we don't run out of residential land or housing sites to provide housing for the community.
What questions do you recommend that community members ask their council members about this general plan update?
I'd encourage them to ask their council to continue to look long-term, that this not be a status report or a plan that is simply a bunch of stitched together five-year plans or 10-year plans. Communities grow and develop over time. It doesn't stop just because it's the end of a regional housing needs cycle. People want to know what it's going to look like 30 years from now or 10, 20 years from now. And so the general plan is often something you grow into. And so I would ask the council to think long term. Don't wait till the last minute. We often hear, the roads don't seem to be keeping up, or the bike paths don't seem to be keeping up with the houses. The way you avoid doing that is by looking long-term and planning for those things.
How do you recommend that community members interact with this document?
There are always opportunities, such as the one that's coming up, to comment. Sometimes the best way to make sure that a plan is implemented faithfully is to follow development projects that come out of that. If parks are promised as part of the recreation element, that during the budgeting process, the public gets involved. As you know, this town has a fairly robust goal setting process, and it's pretty obvious that those who want the parks, bike paths, and other things that actually show up, get more their way than the others who don't. So I would say show up.
That seems like a pretty good note to end this on. Thank you so much, Steve. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
You bet. Thank you.
Now it's time for today's action item. You can find the General Plan Annual Report in the City Council agenda packet. I actually recommend that you read this report. It's written in plain language. It's a great way for community members to see what progress has been made on the issues that we care about. And if you have questions about that, you can, of course, email City Council or city staff, or come to the April 19th City Council meeting and give public comment. Today's episode was produced by Francisco Martinez with music by Wes Bischoff. If you liked the show, please share it with a friend and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Bischoff. See you next time on Agenda Breakdown.
SLOCOG is hosting an Earth Day event this Friday, bringing together diverse voices to discuss what sustainable tourism could look like on the Central Coast in the year 2035. I spoke with John D'Annunzio, transportation planner with SLOCOG, and David Figueroa, partner and project director at DCR Design. First, John, tell me just a little bit about SLOCOG.
Our chief responsibilities include transportation planning and funding for the region, while also serving as a forum for the study and the resolution of other regional issues like housing and vehicular homelessness. So regional agencies like us, we plan, we fund, we manage local transportation systems, and we plan for transportation for all modes of travel. So that includes cars, buses, trains, bikes, walkability, senior shuttles, and other social services transportation.
And are all cities in the county represented with SLOCOG?
Yeah. Each city, either a city council member or the mayor, would sit on our board. So 7 cities and 5 supervisors.
Are you about 50? Not you personally, John. Is SLOCOG about 50 years old?
That's right.
That's just what I thought.
A few years ago, we had our 50th anniversary.
And so what you're putting on is a conversation with panelists and different people from different walks of life locally, thinking about what could tourism look like on the Central Coast in a more sustainable way. And David, how did this all come together, this idea?
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having us. Our participation in it started with what's called the SLOCOG Active Transportation Plan, which was done about a year ago. And we helped SLOCOG put that together. And part of that effort was to collect stories from the community, people who weren't experts in anything but their own lives and how they move around. And we were particularly interested in people who use transit or walk or bike, because those stories were important in helping to provide context for the active transportation plan, because that's what it's all about. So John brought up the need for a discussion about tourism, I think driven by, and John, you can correct me here, but driven by the fact that COVID had shut down some discussions. And now that the pandemic is at least in a better state than it has been for the last 2 years, that tourism, it never has gone away, but it's certainly up in front of everybody now because more people are traveling, more people are planning trips. We have climate goals. People are talking about electrifying not just cars, but buses and maybe other transportation options such as bikes. And what could a sustainable tourist experience look like in 2035? So that's what we put on this event as the target of the discussions. And we hope to have a lively one.
The event is on Friday, which is Earth Day. And it's that afternoon at the SLO Hothouse.
We have programs that cover what is happening inside of our community. And if you live here, then ways to reduce your impact for residents. So one of the gaps of our information and with our regional transportation plan, which we are planning at the moment through slocog.org/engage, are facets of transportation regarding visitors, those people and that are coming to our area, how they get here, what they do once they're here. So there's probably going to be a distinction between how people have arrived here, be it by plane or train or bus or vehicle, and then what do they do once they're here.
They come by train, yeah. Come by plane. How can they have a really good experience without having to, you know, have a car?
It happens in other places, and it should be happening. In fact, I think it is happening here, kind of under the surface. I met somebody at the Fremont Theater who had come up from Los Angeles to see a concert. They rode the Amtrak from Union Station. They said that it was an incredible ride.
That's beautiful.
An incredible view. That, of course, certain stretches of that rail are among the more beautiful in the world.
Amazing.
And then they said to see the artist they saw was about half the price that they would pay in Los Angeles. And they were at a better venue, and they got a great evening or two in San Luis Obispo. So they just thought this was awesome.
It is.
And I think that
it's
type of experience
example.
Needs to be lifted up. And I think, John, a person that you met last week who was down
from
the Bay Area.
We were just getting some Twizzlers from the local Rite Aid, you know, on a break, and bumped into a man and his family of four visiting our area from the Bay Area. He had come down in a rented car or a car share, but was staying at a hotel on Monterey Street and then had cargo bikes delivered from Foothill Cyclery. The family of four were able to just bike around town, enjoy the farmer's market, and do a variety of things car-free, so they didn't have a car while they were here. The view from that individual was that people are in the city are looking for ways to get out again now that COVID is stabilizing and are not interested as much in air travel. And so it really puts San Luis Obispo right between the two metro areas. And so we're specifically looking at the links to tourism and transportation and sustainable transportation through this discussion.
Yeah, and we're hoping the discussion will extend to not just opportunities for people from the metro areas or maybe even beyond to fly in and enjoy San Luis Obispo, but the county as well. And there are obvious issues there, you know, how frequent transit works for people who might just want to, say, go from a hotel in San Luis Obispo down to Morro Bay for the day.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Carol Tangeman, and with me is John DiNunzio, transportation planner with SLOCOG, and David Figueroa, partner and project director at DCR Design. And SLOCOG is putting on an event on Earth Day, Friday, April 22nd, at the Slo Hot House. They'll be having some dynamic conversations focusing around this question of what could the future of sustainable tourism look like on the Central Coast.
I just want to get this out because I think it's an important thing. We've moved the discussion to 2035 for this event because we kind of want to say how good can this be and not get too rooted in what's happening right now, because we know there are lots of challenges and we know there are plenty of issues, and there will be in 2035 too, but we want to hopefully lift the eyes over to the horizon that say, wow, you know, we might even be able to be a leader in some part of a sustainable tourism experience and not just say we want to be like Stockholm or we want to be like somewhere else, that mm-hmm. there's some opportunities here for Slo because of the tourism numbers, which John mentioned, say, let's grab the bull by the horns here and maybe make some really lasting solutions that can be examples for other places. So they say, we want to be like the San Luis Obispo region for sustainable tourism.
John?
Well, I mean, one of the things that the wineries do pretty well is with the tasting shuttles and the beer tasting shuttles and things. And so there are reasons for that that have to do with safety, preventing drunk driving, which is a pretty good policy. They're actually reducing the number of trips and their impact because you can get, you know, 14 people in a van or seven or whatever. And I will say, too, there are some untapped features to the county that as planning progresses, for instance, on the Salinas River Trail or the Anza Trail, which runs from the top of the grade Santa Margarita all the way along the Salinas River to the community of San Miguel. It's a long-term plan that is being assembled with Public Works and City of Atascadero and County Parks and City of Paso, for example, in segments. But the vision for the Salinas River Anza Trail or North County Salinas River Trail is one where people would come for that amenity and would you know, visit wineries in Paso, would bike down to Templeton to visit, you know, the farmers market, might continue on to the colony, you know, in Atascadero and go to downtown restaurants and pubs, and be able to use that feature, the trail along the river, as an experience. So, of course, we also see that regularly with bicycle tourism down Big Sur, mm-hmm. Highway 1, part of the Pacific Coast Bicycle Route and Highway 1. And we're talking about the rebranding of that nationally to be part of the Adventure Cycling U.S. Bike Route 95. So there will be a co-branding that Pacific Coast Bike Route matches with this national bicycle network system. And there are thousands of people that go north or south with bicycle tourism and come through our communities. And then numerous bike events. People come from all over the world to ride their bikes here.
A lot of people have in the past thought, well, I'm not athletic enough. I feel like these new e-bikes are kind of a game changer. That might have a big impact on someone's ability to get on a bike and ride to the next town.
I think it really has. We do counting. So our organization, we help with the bike clubs perform a volunteer bike count every year where volunteers go out with clipboards and sort of count.
Count bikes?
Count bikes, count people. And we're expecting to see a vast increase in e-bikes. I mean, you can just see it anecdotally, whether you're on the beach, you know, up between Morobe and Cayucas on Dog Beach or down in Pismo Beach, increase in e-bikes all over.
Yeah,
so it's great how technology is perpetuating people's ability to enjoy mobility and active living.
There's even in the active transportation plan a story from a Cal Poly student about e-bikes. And he was being stopped by so many people asking him what he was on and how they could get one.
I will comment too that although we do have some compact urban development in City of Slo and in other cities, we don't have the density that large urban areas have in cities. So the conflicts that you see with e-bikes and e-scooters mowing people down as they're trying to cross the sidewalk in downtown LA, for example. It's possible those situations could still happen here, but because of it's less dense, it's less likely. Having that tool that can help reduce the gap between the communities, City of Slo to Avila, and you know, once the Bob Jones Trail is built and all the connections are constructed, thousands of users will be able to make that link and then further contribute to the concept of sustainable tourism and the transportation component to sustainable tourism. We have at Slo Cog, as part of our regional transportation plan, I think a good grasp on many of the modes of transportation and many of the journey purposes other than recreation and leisure, and particularly how it ties back to COVID now being over and people wanting to get out there and to see places. We are looking forward to this discussion to hear from experts, but also from members of our community and people who have a view on sustainable tourism and its link to transportation. Federal or state or regional programs are geared towards assisting commuters, and those programs are of vital importance. However, we're always mixing in those utility trips with recreation trips. We sometimes don't know, for example, with bike counts even, how do you tell if somebody's biking to work or if they're just out for a ride? We want people to ride, right? But that ride might not necessarily be taking somebody out of their car. It might not be replacing a journey. If we can do that, then through programs and promotions, then we're succeeding, and because then we're getting ahead of the types of problems then that would cost us money.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Carol Tangeman, and with me is John DiNunzio, transportation planner with SLOCOG, and David Figueroa, partner and project director at DCR Design. And SLOCOG is putting on an event. They'll be having some dynamic conversations focusing around this question of what could the future of sustainable tourism look like on the Central Coast. So the event is on Friday, Earth Day, and it's from 3 to 5 at SLO Hot House, which is downtown San Luis Obispo.
Yes, that's a collaboration between SLO County and Cal Poly, half co-working space, half incubator space for firms that are starting up in the community. And then they have an event space there too, and that's where we're holding this.
At the event space.
I mean, I personally think at some point, hopefully soon, they do say, hey, we've got to really push transit out now for a while. We have to improve the frequency of it and then market it to the tourists, to the residents, yeah, to the workplaces and say, we're doing this and we're going to do it for a while. And you get a month or two or a whole quarter free to try to change behavior.
And, you know, David, it still goes back to things as simple as pedestrian wayfinding.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How,
what's that?
Well,
pedestrian wayfinding.
How do you find your way around the environment? If you're in downtown Paso Robles and you want to go to a particular location,
there's got to be an app for that.
Right, there are. Well, but we work with this in big urban places. And you find everywhere that people are timid about taking a lot of foot journeys and even transit journeys because they think it's hard to figure out how to get to where they're going. And there are apps for that. But we've also found that not everybody has a smartphone. They feel much more confident if on the street at strategic locations, they see signs that tell them where they are, but also tell them the larger places nearby to give them confidence about moving around. And so,
and you call that wayfinding?
It's wayfinding.
Wayfinding.
Yeah. If you've been in London in the last 10 years, you may have noticed a lot of signs around all over London. That's a program that we worked with many years ago. That's still actively getting it further out
so
into London.
So cities and downtown associations and local chambers of commerce love wayfinding and information bulletins. And on the coast, you can go and look and see a placard of historical references or site placemaking, and it helps each community with its own identity.
Yeah. It helps with their identity, but we think there should be some regional standards so that you encourage people to learn how this communication works. And so if SLO has their own...
So they'll know what to recognize when they see...
Right. So if SLO has their own system and someone thinks, oh, yeah, I get that. And then they might go to Pismo and it's not the same. It's slightly different. There can be confusion, but I also think if you see a regional approach to it, it starts to make everybody in the region feel a bit more linked far as how they communicate their space to others. And I think it encourages these journeys from place to place.
So
if you were
downtown Shell Beach at the new bike facility and having lunch at maybe one of the restaurants down there, and if you saw a sign that said Avila Beach, 3 miles, you might consider riding a bike or taking a trolley.
The avid ones have their apps and they figure this out. But we're talking about spreading that much more broadly.
Yeah.
A lot of younger people who fortunately are starting to look for car-free options, but then especially maybe older people who would have these opportunities with e-bikes, that I can do, and maybe I can go a little bit further than just around the corner to my bread shop or...
Well, and especially, too, if, as you were saying, John, that there are actually routes off of the roads to get you from one community to another.
That's right. You would feel safer. And if you were following a route, it's not just yourself as the walker or the cyclist, but also vehicles who are driving will recognize that they're sharing the space. You know, it's more of a complete street, if you will.
Yeah.
It's related to marketing as well, because you want, with all the improvements you make, to push them out so people know about them and why they're there. Because sometimes people say, oh, a new bike lane, but they're not curious to go see it or that it might be linked, that all of a sudden opens up all these journeys that they previously couldn't do. So that is also something that is related to wayfinding, but really important. And I think Slocog is improving a lot in how they market not only what they're doing, but to get people involved in the process on the way there.
Yeah.
It's challenging, but it's the work we do, and it's interesting. And we think it means something, or we hope it means something. So.
It does mean something.
Yeah.
And John.
Could I just add one more thing?
Absolutely.
Thank you. It's just to plug carfree.org.
Carfree.org
is a program of the Air Pollution Control District that helps visitors plan car-free and car-light itineraries. The website features a list of attractions that link to intermodal transportation options like Slow Downtown, The Mission, Bishop's Peak, the Village of Arroyo Grande, Cal Poly, the Botanical Gardens, and, you know, et cetera. So that's slowcarfree.org.
Well, thank you both for joining me. I'm Carol Tangeman, and I've been speaking with John DiNunzio, transportation planner with Slocog, and David Figueroa, partner and project director at DCR Design. And the event is on Earth Day, Friday, April 22nd. All around the question, what could the future of sustainable tourism look like on the Central Coast? It's at the Slo Hothouse in San Luis Obispo. Slocog's website is
www.slocog.org.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us, Carol.
Thank you.
Next, we'll get a look at how the city of Atascadero is attracting people to its downtown.
For Issues and Ideas, this is Bettina Swigger with our monthly series called Around Downtown. Now, in addition to being a KCBX volunteer radio host, I also serve as the CEO of Downtown Slo, which is a placemaking and business improvement area in San Luis Obispo. For today's segment, I'm very excited to be speaking with Terry Banish from another city on the Central Coast, the city of Atascadero. Terry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Bettina, for having me. It's so nice to see you and be on this show and talk about things about downtown.
Definitely. Well, one of the things that we love about our listening area is it has so many distinct downtown areas. So in Atascadero, I know that the downtown has really been going through a bit of a renaissance. So tell us a little bit about that and what role you personally play.
The role I play is Deputy City Manager for Outreach, Promotions, and Events. And so that's all encompassing. And the downtown is City Council's focus. Having a strong downtown is important to having a strong city. And so there's a lot of attention being given to the downtown and across the city, as you can imagine. You have the downtown, but you have a lot of other businesses as well to support. So, but about 7 years ago, they brought in this position to really put Atascadero on the map and focus on the downtown and focus on all of our assets that we have here in Atascadero, from our zoo to Faces of Freedom to our Galaxy Theater to the historic City Hall.
So here you are, 7 years in, two of which have been during a pandemic, which has been certainly disruptive to all city government activities, definitely to events and also to small business.
Coming into 2022, I think everybody wants to get out and everybody wants to do things. So it's kind of like drinking through a fire hose. You're trying to do all these things and get all these events back in order. It's nice to be back. There's such pent-up demand that people really want to get out, and that's exciting.
So from the city government perspective, how do you see your relationship with small business owners and then with other maybe nonprofit organizations who serve that same mission and idea of downtown being essential to the city? Tell us a little bit about how Atascadero operates.
So we have our chamber, our Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, and we have a new president and CEO, Josh Cross. We also have a business improvement committee that's housed under the chamber, because the chamber works as the nonprofit for the assessment, for the downtown parking assessment that we have in place. Those businesses pay a certain amount of money each year. They pay like a $50 fee, and that includes the marketing and beautification of the downtown businesses. So there is attention given to the downtown more so because of that. And it's all the downtown businesses that are within that geographical area. So we all work hand in hand to bring these events to fruition. So from the chamber doing their art and wine walk to our downtown business committee doing At Her Table and doing the festival at the end of that event. And then the city bringing in things like Tamale Festival and the spring concert series, all of that is by design to be in the downtown and to support our downtown businesses and really bring traffic, drive folks to come down here, see our stores, see all of our craft breweries and wine bars and distillery and cideries and all the things we have going on that are very unique. And it's important to us as a city to have a very vibrant downtown. So anytime different ideas come up, it's like, oh my gosh, let's do that. Like First Fridays, before we went into COVID, we were on a roll to do First Fridays here in our city. So we're working on that again. It's going to be our fall First Fridays. We're bringing in different bands on the first Friday of every month.
So how has the downtown environment changed in the last couple of years? I know in some cities along the Central Coast, we had parklets get deployed for outdoor dining.
Yep.
Sounds like there's been maybe an uptick in craft beer establishments in Atascadero.
We've had quite a few. So some of the new things that are now open, Ancient Al and Bottle Shop that went in across from the Carlton and next to Colony Market in Delhi, and they have Negrante Creamery. And then La Plaza has come into play. It's a mixed use building that's across from Sunken Gardens. It's the two big buildings actually, where it's retail on the bottom and then office space and residential that folks can come in and rent and be living in the downtown. And so that has all evolved over COVID. I mean, obviously it was in the plan before, but since things have started opening back up, they are thriving, as well as Wild Fields Brewing. They really did quite a bit over in the Creekside building next to Galaxy Theater to really come into play and do anything and everything possible to get through the COVID timeframe. Galaxy Theater is another one, as you can imagine. The movies went, no movies being produced, no theaters surviving. And so now they're on that rebound. Hasn't been easy.
Yeah, the work is so complicated because it involves people, places, and public spaces.
Yes,
right?
So exactly.
People are complicated. Public space is complicated.
You know, there's a lot of positive, though, that's come through with this. And I think just the opportunity for the to-go aspect and kind of keeping to-go stuff in place. And there's a lot of good positive things. But we have quite a few things coming up. So when I talked about La Plaza, we have Cielo, the Italian restaurant and rooftop bar at La Plaza. So we will have a rooftop bar. I'm not sure exactly when, but soon. We have a frozen yogurt shop going in at La Plaza. We have Lulu Cheese Girl going in. So we have a cheese shop that'll be coming in, which is super fun. Atrium Mercantile, Home Goods and Furnishings. So there's all kinds of different things happening on the retail space. And it's exciting to see that. As you know, I mean, in San Luis Obispo, same.
Definitely. Okay. Well, and that natural churn is part of a healthy economy, right? You want to see new businesses opening and that new energy coming in. That La Plaza development sounds very cool, to use a technical term.
I love those technical terms.
And is that where the farmer's market takes place?
Farmer's market takes place across from it in the Sunken Gardens. It's on El Camino Real between Entrada and East Mall, across from Sunken Gardens. And across from Sylvester's Hamburgers. It's a beautiful building. And so it kind of frames the downtown and makes us have a downtown with Atascadero. El Camino Real is 7.5 miles long. And we were county up until 1979. We weren't incorporated as a city until that time. So we didn't really have that downtown core. And we do now. And we're going to be working on El Camino Real corridor enhancement plan, which kind of pulls it down to one lane on each side. So a lot more is coming into play on that. The farmer's market itself is on East Mall at the Sunken Gardens. And they celebrated 5 years. And the 5 years is from the point of when we brought them back to the Sunken Gardens. It took us a year to get the farmers to be on board with moving. They were over in the Smart and Final parking lot, which prior to that was Hagen, and prior to that was Albertsons. And the reason why they were there is we had the San Simeon earthquake, and it shut down City Hall and the surrounding area back in 2003, and we didn't open until 2013, reopen. So that time frame, they went elsewhere, which I don't blame them. So bringing them back was really key, and we're so happy to have them here. And we do a lot of different events around that. Summer Sizzle is one of them that we do in the summer when school's out to get foot traffic for them, but also foot traffic to the downtown. We also have our spring concerts that we started this spring to bring back in every Saturday, you know, have a couple hours out in Sunken Gardens. We love our area around Historic City Hall. We also love our area out at Atascadero Lake Park. And so our summer concert series will stay out there. But this is an opportunity for us to try something different here in the downtown with the different concerts in the spring. And, you know, so far it's done really well. There's been lots of people that come down a little earlier and then they stay later. Just getting folks out of their homes and getting them downtown is important.
They might not go shopping that day, but they'll walk by the shop and think, oh, I need to visit that place.
I don't remember that being there. We got to come back. With our restaurants and our wine bars and craft breweries, we have about 5 craft breweries within walking distance of each other. And our city is open container. So while that's something that, you know, we don't always promote per se, it does make it a little easier for folks if they want to go to a brewery and they have, you know, a beer in hand, they're going to the next stop within walking distance, that make it a ton of fun. So, and that brings me to Art and Wine Walk. May 6th is the Art and Wine Walk. Businesses will have different wines or beer or whatever. You get a glass and a wristband and you get to go into that business and sample what they're pouring. It's a great event that has been going on for quite some time. I believe Mayor Martin out of Paso was once the president of the Atascadero Main Street Association, and he started that event and it kind of evolved from there. Definitely go on to atascaderochamber.org or visit atascadero.com and you can see all of our events and things that we have going on and get your tickets for the wine walk because that's fun.
In my daily life, I hear from people frequently who say, oh gosh, I haven't been downtown in a while. And for those of us who work downtown, well, first of all, that just is shocking because downtown's where it's at. But we do need to remember that that's not everybody's experience, especially if they may have been working from home or they might work in a different city from where they live. So it's a lot about trying to message local people in addition to our tourists to have them come and rediscover their own downtowns.
We have our families as well. And in our downtown, we do have, you know, things like Mr. Putter's Putt-Putt Golf. We have Galaxy Theater. We have, you know, different businesses that also appeal to the kids and families. Colony Market and Deli has cornhole out there that you can play. Wildfields Brew House has a whole arcade and rollerball because they're in the former bowling alley building. Everyone's done such a good job bringing that in. Same with Tent City Brewing across the street. They have Tent City food truck in the back, but they have games back there for kids too. So they're very kid friendly.
So I wonder if we could switch gears a little bit right now and talk a little bit about the physical environment of downtown. You've mentioned that the City Hall and the Sunken Gardens were closed and they reopened in 2013. I remember when that happened and your City Hall is so stunningly beautiful.
Thank you.
Can you say a little bit about that building and the history?
So it was started in 1913 and was completed in 1918. You know, focus of E.G. Lewis, our founder, was to bring folks in, give them different parcels of land. So he set up tents for them. So namely Tent City. And Tent City was right around City Hall. And then he would allocate all of the different parcels for an apricot orchard or peaches or what have you. And then we had our Caladero packing plant. So you could bring all of your fruits and vegetables and things and get them canned and put in jars and that sort of thing. So there's a whole history there. I don't do it justice, but the building itself is iconic to Atascadero. And after the earthquake, the whole remodeling of it, FEMA came in with about $32 million to restore City Hall. So none of public funds were ever used for City Hall to restore it. And they kind of put it back in its luster back in the day. So the ceiling of the lower rotunda that you don't see from the freeway was all white. And then when they brought it back and restored it, now it has the colors of what the ceiling would have been painted had it been painted at that time. And then the upper rotunda is what you see from the freeway, that dome shape that suffered the most damage, but it is super beautiful inside that room too. It's where we have our city council meetings on the fourth floor. Back in the day, high school reunions and weddings and all kinds of stuff was done up there. So it's an exciting place. We give tours of City Hall. We typically give tours during the Art and Wine Walk. We'll open up City Hall for special tours, but you can at any time go and visit atascadero.com and arrange a tour with one of the docents. There's quite a bit of history, and they can really walk you through that history. We also have a video that takes you through some of the things too that are on visitatascadero.com. You know, it is the center point for things. So whenever we do events, they're all kind of focused specifically to Sunken Gardens and City Hall.
You have this beautiful building that was reconstructed because of disaster funding that came through FEMA, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're at this moment where we're sort of imagining a new reality in this stage of the pandemic. And
Right. You
also received federal dollars, presumably disaster dollars for COVID through ARPA and other recovery initiatives. So I think it's connected. It's all connected.
Yeah, it's connected. And
see the beautiful things that can come out of
times. That's just it. You got to take the good in all that's happened and keep moving forward and really appreciate where we're at because we've gone through so much. And these events kind of speak volumes to that. You know, Tamale Festival was a hit. We have our brand new Fall Fest that will be back again in November. I mean, we've had some things evolve out of that. You know, it's kind of good. We all took a break in a way. And then here we're coming back to appreciate things even more. And the Fall Fest, which was the carnival rides and things that came in, that was a 2-year in the making event. It didn't just happen overnight. And there was a lot of things to consider when you bring in rides, where they're placed and making sure they're safe and being able to do fireworks in January for Tamale Festival, because we can't do it any other time of year. It's too dry. Be able to bring that to the community too is exciting. And just seeing the looks on people's faces when they, you know, are watching that, you know, part of it is pretty cool.
There's no way to quantify the oohs and the ahs.
Yeah. Brings tears to my eyes. And I was standing out in the audience going, oh my gosh, okay, I can get through this.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your insight, and you've done such tremendous work over the last 7 years. So keep it up, Terry.
Thank you. Tascadero is an awesome place and a great team and great city council. I can't speak enough about that.
Great. And one more time, can you tell us just your name and your title?
Terry Banish, Deputy City Manager of Promotions, Outreach, and Events for the City of Atascadero.
Thank you so much, Terry. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you in Atascadero downtown or the next time you're in downtown SLO. For Issues and Ideas, this is the monthly segment called Around Downtown. My name is Bettina Swigger.
And finally, KCBX's Brian Reynolds checks in with Erica Thatcher of the County of San Luis Obispo Public Libraries.
Welcome, Erica.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
There's always exciting things going on at the library, now more than ever. But this is sort of a tradition. This is a book of the year that is done in cooperation with Cuesta College and the Cal Poly Student Diversity and Belonging Group. But let's talk a little bit about the history of the book of the year, then some events that are upcoming. Do you know how far back in history this goes?
Well, it started before I came on board here at the library, and I've been here 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm thinking maybe 10 years or so, and I know that it's a very good partnership with Cuesta Community College. They provide some resources and venues for events. Of course, the County Library does as well throughout their branches.
Right. But
the Book of the Year concept, how would you describe it, and why do you think it's important?
I would describe it as your community reads model, but this is more of a countywide literary event where folks are all reading the same book, but we're also encouraging them to engage with our programming, you know, our mission, actually. You know, our mission is to connect our community to creativity, culture, and knowledge, and we like to do that through books, you know, timely books. Current issues can really bring people together.
So the more generic term is like one city reads, like Boston reads,
right,
or Seattle reads. And the idea is that a book is carefully chosen that people are encouraged to read and discuss it with themselves and also at events. And typically there's a gangbusters event at the end where the author shows up. Let's talk about what's happening this year, the name of the book and the author.
So the title that was selected this year is an award-winning title. It's called There, There. And it's written by Tommy Orange. And The novel follows 12 Native American characters, and they're traveling to a powwow in Oakland, California. So this is a California connection.
Mm-hmm.
So each of the characters has this pretty heartbreaking story. Tommy Orange really tells their stories beautifully and sometimes humorously. So the ending is a shocker, though.
Ah.
But I think anyone who enjoys reading Louise Erdrich will notice kind of similarities with Tommy's writing style. The writing is like really vivid and compelling, and I think he's a fantastic storyteller.
I'm looking at a picture from your press release of the cover of the book, and it's called There, There. And it's, of course, an orange color, I guess, tipping the hat to the author. Now, just briefly, want to talk about this now and then at the end of our interview, but the dates that are upcoming, there are some events that are happening.
So, yes, the event on the 19th, it's a California State Parks program. We've been doing these really great virtual programs, and they're live, but the California State Parks offers an interpreter. So this one is for the Kashtaiit Conservation Area, and that's in Gaviota. So that one's on Tuesday, April 19th at 10 a.m. And the interpreter will take the participants through the connections between the indigenous people of the Central Coast and what marine conservation efforts, how that all connects.
I've been to Gaviota, the park there in the ocean, the beach, many times. It's a very beautiful spot, and it kind of gives you the sense of what it was even in prehistory, and maybe the vibrations or the idea of Native Americans people living there really for thousands of years. Now, the author himself, Tommy Orange, will be coming on the 21st?
That's correct. So he will be appearing at the Cuesta College Performing Arts Center on the 21st, and tickets are on sale. They're $5 for general public. Students are free, so you can get tickets at tickets.cuesta.edu.
And that'll be at the CPAC on Cuesta's campus, which is a beautiful theater.
Yeah, so that's at the SLO campus. And it's an author talk and a book signing, so he'll be signing books after the lecture.
My memory of these events is that they very often sell out quickly. So I'm guessing that people, if they want to go there and meet the author, get a signed copy of the book, they better jump right on it.
Yeah, last year we had to release a few extra tickets, or Cuesta released a few extra tickets for the event. It was online, but it sold out, and we were able to release some extra tickets for the event with author Meredith May. So, yeah, they do. They fill up fast.
What are some of the things going on in the branches? Are there any activities around the county that people can participate in, or is it just, and of course, where do they get the copy of the book so they can read it ahead of time?
Some of the libraries may have complimentary copies. We've been giving them out, and they've been coming back into the library, so there may be some of those available.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have copies for request in our catalog at slowlibrary.org. And we also have book discussion kits, where there are 10 paperback copies per kit and discussion guide.
I think we used to call those book club in a box.
Right. Now they're in a bag. But those are some of the things that are available in the library. Right now we're transitioning back to in-person programming. So there have been a few in-person book discussion groups.
If a person goes to one of our library branches or attends an in-library event, should they expect to have to wear a mask?
So we're following the county's guidance, and some folks wear masks and some folks don't, and everything seems to be working out pretty good.
I would like to remind everyone that I am Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by Erica Thatcher, Engagement and Marketing Coordinator for the County of San Luis Obispo Public Libraries. I'd like to talk a little bit about the often overlooked role of a public library, because it does so many things. The icon people think of is going to a place and borrowing a book or maybe reading a newspaper, but they do so much more than that. And Native American history locally and in California, as a part of our history, the people who live here today, we came at a later date. Still, the idea of an ancient and worthy civilization surrounding us, but these days almost invisible, I think it's pretty amazing that the library and other community groups are able to work with the descendants of those groups and bring it to life for people today.
We thought about this when we were creating programming, that it's important to let folks know that, you know, there's a complicated and painful past, but there's also the present. There's contemporary indigenous Californian life and future, too. So, you know, I think all these programs share that idea.
The book itself.
I've read it, and there's some really painful things in the stories, but there's a lot of humor and hope. And again, the ending is a shocker. Like I said, there's this kind of this hope, this kind of uplifting feeling you get from reading it.
It seems to me public libraries in general, and of course everybody knows I was a public librarian most of my career, they present many aspects of a single issue. They provide answers, many answers to one particular question. And I know that makes some people uncomfortable, seems chaotic or just too much information. But I think we as adults today, we need to be more comfortable with more than one answer or more comfortable with ideas and issues that are negative or dark.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's important for us to make the space for folks to share their stories, for everybody to share their stories, you know, amplifying voices that have traditionally not been heard.
And there's the additional side of what public libraries offer, and this is sort of the quintessential element of this. You're reading an interesting book, your neighbors and friends are reading it, which I think is a healthy antidote to the internet, and then getting together with others and participating, not online, but in person. I think that's a huge step forward, and a lot of people don't realize, I think, the public libraries are one of the few places anywhere that you can go in and get out of the weather and be comfortable, be safe, be entertained all day if you so choose, or grab some stuff and go. They're a community gathering place at a time when I think those kinds of community gatherings are more important than ever.
It made me think of a story. One of our kind of super fans on Instagram made a post about how she gets a dopamine hit every time she goes to the library and fills up her book bag. And you know, you can come in and get your books, but you're also going to feel really good about doing it.
Let's see. Anything else that you want people to know about? Let's mention those dates again.
We have a California State Parks online tour of the Kashtayit Conservation Area on Gaviota's Coast, and that's Tuesday, April 19th at 10 a.m. And again, you can register at our events calendar at slowlibrary.org. And then our main event with Tommy Orange and his novel There, There will be an author lecture and book signing. That is Thursday, April 21st at 5 o'clock at the Cuesta College Performing Arts Center on the SLO campus. And tickets are on sale now at tickets.cuesta.edu.
These programs are typically very popular, so we encourage people to get their tickets soon. Tell a friend, bring a friend. Thank you so much, Erica, for talking about this important event, Tommy Orange and his book of the year choice. They're there studying through the novel, Native American Issues and History. This has been Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. We were joined by Erica Thatcher, Marketing and Engagement Coordinator for the County of San Luis Obispo Public Libraries. Thank you, Erica.
Thanks, Brian.
You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. Gary Eyster composed our theme music. A special thanks to all our guests and contributors this week. I'm Carol Tangeman. Join us each Monday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon for more local stories. You can head to our website to learn more about what you heard today or to listen to past segments, kcbx.org.